Dads on the air, we're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues.
Hi, I'm Bill Cable.
And our special guest today is Paul Mason. Paul is a family law barrister. He is the former Tasmanian Children's Commissioner, and he is the inaugural chair of the Australian Institute for Genital Autonomy. He's also the patron of the Genital Autonomy UK. Paul, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bill.
Now, today we get to talk about a topic that doesn't get raised very often, but when it does, the reactions are usually emotional. Many men get a strong urge to cross their legs. But Paul Mason, you refer to genital autonomy rather than circumcision. Why is that?
There are a lot of people around the world who generally call themselves intactivists, who are devoted to changing attitudes and laws about male circumcision. But it occurred to me in my work that this was a broader issue and a broader historical issue around children generally. So the idea of genital autonomy is that all children have the right to protection from unnecessary surgery of all kinds, in particular genital surgery.
So starting from the beginning, I imagine some people would be surprised that this even occurs to girls.
Something like 110 million girls around the world whose genitals are cut for various reasons, including religious and including what their communities see as health reasons. And in Australia, every state has laws, criminal laws, that prohibit unnecessarily cutting the genitals of girls.
You've mentioned the laws there, and you are a practicing barrister. Is the question often raised that you're not actually a doctor and perhaps this discussion should be held with a doctor?
No, I'm a parent of a boy, and I think that qualifies me quite adequately. Thanks, Bill. And I'm a boy myself, so...
Yeah. Well, you've passed the physical. Now, with females, we were just talking about the boys and girls around the world, but females, it's usually given another name, isn't it? It's not necessarily called circumcision.
Well, that's a fascinating subject, the subject of nomenclature, of wording. The women who defend the practice in Northern Africa in particular, and in Sub-Saharan Africa, decry the use of the word mutilation. And in fact, the World Health Organization and UNICEF use the phrase female genital cutting, FGC, rather than FGM, mutilation. And the interesting thing about that is that in this discourse, we have a word for girls in Australia, mutilation, and a word for boys, which is not mutilation. And it makes it sound as if what happens to boys is less mutilation than what happens to girls. The other interesting thing about mutilation, FGM, is that there is a definition of it by the World Health Organization and UNICEF, and it covers four different types of procedure. And the one that we commonly in the West have in foremost in our mind is the, if I can call it, the full Monty version, but that is not the most common. 90% of the female genital cutting around the world is not the full Monty stitching up and cutting out version.
Without being too graphic, I wonder if you could tell us what is actually involved with circumcision and female genital cutting.
And to our north, we have the world's most populous Muslim country, Indonesia, and in Indonesia it is very, very common for girls to have some form of cutting in the ages between about 1 and 4, approved by and recommended by church ministers, by the imams there. The Indonesian government is a signatory to the, it's called CEDAW, is the Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination of All Kinds Against Women, if I can say that quickly. And the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Children itself, in Article 29, prohibits what are called harmful traditional practices being used on children. The Indonesian government has signed up to that, so they've been pressuring communities in Indonesia to tone back the level of cutting of girls. As I said, and I'll just finish on this, there are four types of cutting of girls. Type 3 is the one that most comes to mind, and it's the one that I think drove the outlawing of it in Australia. But the odd thing is that the descriptions in the criminal laws in the states of Australia describe procedures which are routinely carried out by cosmetic surgeons for women who are rich enough to pay for it privately. So, oddly enough, every day in Australia, procedures are carried out on adult women which fit within the criminal law, and I don't know quite how the prosecuting authorities see that. As for boys, there are different ways of cutting, removing the foreskin from the penis. That's essentially what it is. To do that, you need some kind of cutting implement. Throughout history, there's been fingernails, there's been elaborate religious implements designed, and nowadays we've got modern plastic things that that you have to slip under the foreskin and then crush the foreskin at its base so that it cuts off the blood supply and it drops off. That's the range of the foreskin to modern technique. In every case, when a boy is born, his foreskin is almost welded to the head of his penis by a tight membrane. It's part of the penis. It's not a separate thing, an extra bit of skin, as is often typed. It's a very complex organism. It's got many layers in it. It's got nerve cells. It's got a blood supply. And to get under the foreskin, you have to peel the foreskin back from the glands of the penis. That in itself is a procedure which harms the surface of the glands of the penis. And it is a procedure which is painful if the foreskin hasn't fallen away by itself. Now, all men who still have their foreskin know that as they go through childhood, between about the ages of 4 and 10, their foreskin comes away by itself. And that's because as you grow older, your genetic design triggers off hormones which dissolve that membrane I was talking about and release the foreskin of the penis. Now, why would nature do that? The reason is that nature wants babies to be protected from infection, so it has this seal over the end of the penis. Nature also wants men, when they reach puberty, to be able to procreate and make the next generation. So obviously the foreskin has to come back sometime between birth and puberty. And that's the mechanics of it.
Well, so we've talked about the procedures. Is there any regulation in Australia as to who does this circumcision on these young boys?
No, there isn't. There are laws that prohibit unqualified people from performing surgery, but there are people who are not doctors in Australia who perform circumcisions of boys, just as there are, I understand from information I've received, people in Australia who perform various kinds of female genital cutting. And in this discussion, Bill, it's important to remember that there's another set of babies, and they are intersex babies. They're babies who are neither boys nor girls. And in our culture, we don't seem to have adjusted to the idea of these in-between babies, these intersex babies, growing up to be intersex adults. Our culture is very binary, and the first thing you say when your mum comes home from the hospital is it a boy or a girl? That's what grandma's going to ask, and it's difficult for mum to say, well, I don't know, or well, neither, or anything like that. So it's a terribly difficult thing for parents when an intersex baby's born, and the question is surgery necessary or not? And that example shows a strong light onto the situation of both boys and girls as well. Because if we're going to treat babies equally between themselves as human beings, looking at the intersex needs of an intersex child tells us that as long as the child is functioning as a baby, then there's no hurry. There's no need to rush in with a scalpel and start chopping things up and deciding whether the child is going to grow up as a boy or a girl. Now, it's true that there are some 40 different kinds of intersex condition, and the vast majority are going to grow up to identify as girls when they grow up. But there's always that minority that won't. So to allocate, assign a sex to an intersex baby is a very grave and very big step, in my opinion. That cuts back into boys and girls again, because if we're going to model the genitals of girls or boys according to our culture or according to our religion, according to what our religion dictates, we have to consider whether it's about us or whether it's about the baby, the child. And this is how I got involved in it. As Commissioner for Children in Tasmania, my focus was on the rights of children. And it seems to me that the right of a child is that every parent will keep the child healthy, bring the child up, and let the child grow up old enough to decide what they want to do with their bodies. So if they grow up and they want to be circumcised, or they want to remodel their vulva, their vagina, or if they're an intersex kid and they decide they want to turn their vagina into a penis or vice versa, then that's the time for them to do it. Let them decide. And that's what the word autonomy is about. It's about individuals choosing what they do with their bodies.
But we're going to take a short break now. We're going to play a song by John Lennon called Imagine. That was Imagined by John Lennon. Paul Mason, we were just talking about the intersex children. In Australia, there is a revulsion about surgery on young female genitals, but with boys, it seems to be, well, more accepted anyway. What are the reasons usually given for parents when they say they are going to get the child circumcised?
There's a stock list of them, Bill. I want my boy to look like Dad, which is a bit peculiar because no boy looks like his dad. There's an excuse that I want my boy not to feel unusual when he's in the locker room, when he's playing footy or whatever. But that argument doesn't really hold fire. If you look in Australia, about 15% of boys are circumcised, according to Medicare claims, and that means nowadays about 85% of boys are not. And so if you want your boy to feel comfortable in the locker room, you'll leave him alone. Other reasons are that there are people who promote circumcision on the basis that it reduces the risk of complications from urinary tract infections if they arise. Well, urinary tract infections do arise in both boys and girls. We don't cut girls to reduce the risk of UTIs. There are ways of treating urinary tract infections. The first is hygiene, the second is antibiotic. A tiny, tiny number of cases where a urinary tract infection is so bad, has become so bad, that surgery is necessary on a boy or on a girl. So that's a third reason, is a medical reason. Another reason is that people say, oh, it's cleaner, it's easier to clean. Well, as I've explained, when the baby's born, the only thing you need to clean is the outside of his body, and particularly between the cheeks of his bum. That's the most important thing to do for a baby. But as he grows older, he will learn to shower by himself, and by the age of 5 or 6, there he is in the shower, he'll wash himself, and he won't wash underneath his foreskin. And parents don't need to wash under the foreskin, because as I've explained, it's part of the penis. You don't wash inside the vagina of your baby girl, your daughter. And you wouldn't do that for any number of reasons, partly because you'd be increasing the risk of introducing infection. And there are studies that show that peeling back the foreskin of little boys increases their risk of infection. So people say, oh, it's cleaner. Many mothers online say, oh, it looks better, it looks sexier. But why do you want your own boy to look sexy? I mean, he'll look as sexy as he is when he grows up. And other reasons, people who promote circumcision of boys say that it reduces their risk of acquiring HIV and HPV, which is a human papillomavirus, in adulthood when they are having intercourse with an infected female. And many, many questions arise there. You need to practice safe sex, and I hope I don't need to say that too often, but we all need to do that. And if we practice safe sex, that won't happen. In those places where, in Africa in particular, where there have been mass circumcision programs, the researchers all tell the people they've circumcised, you have to wear a condom afterwards. You have to wear a condom. Condom is the only way to protect yourself from HIV, the only effective way to do it. So that's another reason that people give. But again, why do it on a baby? Why not let the boy decide to do it when he grows up and learns about it? And he can decide, well, I read about this, and yes, I think that's a good idea. I think I'll get it done to myself.
Well, the other big reason, I'm sure, is the cultural, and particularly the religious reasons why parents would get it done.
Well, culture and religion sort of flow into each other, and you referred to that earlier, where the locker room argument is that I want my boy to look like the other boys. And in the two religions in the world in particular, Islam and Judaism, it is seen as routine for boys to be circumcised. Jewish people believe that, as I understand it, I'm not Jewish, but I have a lot of Jewish friends in the genital autonomy movement who advise me about these things. There is a prescription in Genesis that God said to Abraham that you and your tribe will do it to boys when they're 8 days old. Islam follows that book as well, but they don't follow the 8-day rule. I think there is an understanding that by the time a boy goes to mosque, he should be circumcised. That's in most classes of Islam. But as you know, there are many, many schools of Islam. There are many schools of Judaism. And there are Jews and Muslims around the world who do not circumcise their boy children. And there are Muslims around the world who believe that it is either a requirement or a recommended procedure to cut their girls as well. And I raise that again because one of the main reasons for the religious cutting of children's genitals is to control their excessive sexual expression as they grow older. So it's a matter of reducing the sexual excitement of boys, of reducing boys playing with themselves and girls playing with themselves and girls becoming promiscuous as they enter puberty. Yes, there are religious requirements around the world to do a number of different things to children, and that brings me back again to children's rights. Are children born Christian or Jewish or Buddhist or Jain or Hindu or Muslim? Are they born that way? Or is that something that we as parents want them to become? Is it necessary? If you are not circumcised, does that mean you are not a Muslim? And I think the other answer, and I've asked this of Jewish scholars and of Islamic scholars, if circumcision did not happen, would Islam and Judaism crumble into dust and cease to exist? And the obvious answer is absolutely not. If you took out one thing, if you took out Hanukkah, if you took out circumcision, if you took out one observance, would the entire edifice of Judaism crumble into nothing? And the answer is no. And as we go through history, forward through history, cultures change, religions change, and there's no reason why people have to be stuck with their past practices into the future. Things are changing, Bill, and attitudes towards circumcision are changing. You and I come from a generation where it was much more acceptable than it is today in Western societies. The law itself is sort of, as usual, lagging a long way behind.
Well, there are clear medical dangers in following this practice. Even some children have even died from it. But do you think the law will get to the stage where doctors may be charged with assault?
Well, that happened in 2012 in Germany in a court in Cologne. On the 7th, and thanks for raising that, the 7th of May 2012 was the decision of the Cologne District Court where a doctor was charged with an assault, that is a non-consensual touching of another person. And the court said, yes, there wasn't a consent, and the parents' consent in that case wasn't sufficient consent for the doctor to proceed. Now, that's the issue about an assault on a child, a surgery on a child. Surgery is an assault, and we normally consent to that assault, and the doctor goes ahead. If we're too young or too intellectually disabled to give a consent, then someone has to do that on our behalf. So, question at law. Can a parent consent to an unnecessary surgery on a child? And the 7th of May 2012, a court in Germany said no. That risk is not a risk that a parent can undertake. And as you pointed out, the risks are various and they include disfigurement and death. So the 7th of May has become an annual event around the world, the Worldwide Day for Genital Autonomy. There's a Facebook page, a Facebook event about that. So if you, I don't know, I'm not very good at Facebook, so, but people who can find it can find it. I suppose if you search for it, you'll find it somewhere. So
I think we need to get the same stage with boys as we've already reached as far as girls in Australia. But we've reached the stage of the show, Paul Mason, where we ask our guests to pick a song. Would you like to tell us which song you've picked and why you picked it?
Yes, I chose Dusty Springfield's version of You Don't Own Me. I chose Dusty Springfield, Mary O'Brien's her real name, because I grew up absolutely adoring her. Black and white tellies, you could turn the contrast right up and the lights right up, and all you could see was her mascara, those two round eyes. And I always adored her voice. The song itself came out of the 1960s. It came out of the concept that women are human beings. Women are real, live human beings. They have rights. They are individual. We don't own them. We don't own our babies. We don't own our servants. We don't own our slaves anymore. And the new idea, it's still a new idea that children are people and children have rights. And that's why I chose that song.
And that was You Don't Own Me by Dusty Springfield. So it just remains for me now to thank our special guest today, Paul Mason. Thank you very much for being on the program.
Thanks for having me, Bill. Great.
Don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners, so you can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email and we'll be in touch. And if you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another program on Dads on the Air.